About a year ago, I saw Jimmy Corsetti posit something that I'd seen other people say before. Maybe the Nephilim in the Bible is an ancestral memory of another species of hominid like Neanderthal or Denisovan. But this got Jimbo attacked mercilessly by archaeologists and debunkers who were just like, Neanderthal and Denisovans are shorter than Cro-Magnon. What are you talking about? Well, recent finds have shown that this was not the case. It looks like Denisovans actually towered over the other hominids in their region. And not only that, it looks like they were spread all over the region much further than previously accepted. And there are other traits Denisovans had that do heavily imply we have a memory of them somewhere in our culture. Some of this stuff is written about. Some of it is emulated. So strap yourselves in and we're going to find out what they put in the water that turned the cone head straight. Hi, my name is Dan and welcome to the Dungeon. As many of you know, I live in Spokane, Washington, and this area has been hammered with fires lately. Hundreds of homes have been destroyed, thousands of people have been displaced, millions of dollars worth of damage, and the community is still recovering. It's been overwhelming. And Shadle Park, which is the area I live in, has been hit particularly hard, with the high school now acting as an impromptu emergency center where you can find everything from bottled water, to food, to clothing, to an insurance company on site to help facilitate claims. The community has really come together, and the Shadle Park High School Booster Club is taking donations to take care of the greater community. They're only accepting cash and gift cards at this point, with plenty of food and water and clothing. But if you are so inclined to donate, they'll leave a link down below for you to email them, and they'll facilitate however you want to handle it. I don't think they have a GoFundMe or anything like that set up. I think they're just talking to people and taking donations. Again, this isn't something that we planned on. But if you do feel like helping the community, I would really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now back to your video. In 2010, near Taiwan, a bunch of bones were dredged up off the sea floor, and a mandible was tested and found to have had Denisovan proteins in it. This indicated that if they did some more work, they could find out more about the Denisovans, which we don't really know much about. So they did more work, and guess what? They found femur and a tibia, and this let them determine how tall these guys were in life. They were a full 6 foot plus a couple inches tall in a place where 5 foot six was the norm. So they were towering over their contemporaries. This changed the previous belief that they were about the same height as the Homo sapiens in the region, maybe even a little shorter, which opened the door to hypotheses like the one Jim has. When they spoke of Nephilim in the Bible, were they referring to Denisovans or a similar hominid species? Now, honestly, the way they attack Jim for this is hilarious to me. It's not like he's saying Anunnaki genetically modified humans to make the mind gold or anything. He's saying something that's perfectly in line with accepted scientific knowledge, perfectly in line with what they believe, just adding a little bit of logical speculation. We know humans and Denisovans interbred. We know we hung out and talked to each other. So if that's the case, the idea that our written records, that our oral traditions, that our cultural lexicon would remember this is not crazy. It's not ridiculous at all. What is crazy is the way they attack Jim because it's Jim, not because of what he's saying. I've experienced this firsthand clowns. They lie about me to debunk me all the time. As Kurt Metzger put it, they put me in the same camp with Madame Blavatsky. Why? Because it suits them to do so. And they were doing that shit to Jim long before they were doing it to me. Anyway, before I start rambling, let's get back to the point. So let's talk Denisovans. First discovered in 2010, the bone that was first to be identified as Denisovan came from the Denisova Cave in Siberia. Just a little finger bone, and it was identified by DNA. Not by old school kind of looks like this science. It was conclusively determined to be related to us, but distinct. And Denisovans were closer to Neanderthal than Homo sapiens, not just genetically, but in appearance. From what we know, they were thick and squat with a low center of gravity, a massive brow, no chin, a sloping forehead, and most of their molars were massive. Dark hair, dark eyes, skin darker than mine. I mean, artistic representations often look like an Asian Neanderthal, and whether or not that's politically incorrect, I'll let you decide. What is a big deal is we don't have a full skeleton of the Denisovans. We don't even have anything close to a full skeleton of Denisovans. And this makes the exact specs for a Denisovan player character somewhat unknown. I mean, they use tools, fire, made ornamentation, although some believe that the ornaments were a product of a later hominid species and not the Denisovans. The Denisova cave was occupied for a very long time by numerous species. One of the most impressive and well-known examples of their artifacts is this green chlorite bracelet, which has this very precise, for its time, drill hole in it. It was probably a hand-driven drill, not a Flintstone Model 6-7, but it could have been. We don't know for sure. The end result is gorgeous nonetheless, but this, like so many other artifacts that may or may not be Denisovan, were found in that Denisova cave and are hotly debated today. No one can say for sure who used what tools or ornaments, but the age of things like this bracelet do imply the Denisovans themselves made it. The bottom line is, to us today, the Denisovans are just as mysterious as the female origami. I mean, it's really confusing as to how all this worked. But one thing that we do know is that they weren't short and squat. They were tall and big. In fact, their contemporaries could have easily described them as giant. Now, how did they come to this determination? Well, those bones that they found in the Penghu Strait, like I said, they were a femur and a tibia, and this allowed them to use mathematics to determine the height of the individuals, assuming they used the same Lego kits that we do. If they have a different standard size of brick, it might have turned out a little different. But at the end of the day, what they're saying is these guys were pretty damn tall compared to their contemporaries and compared to previous estimations. And this is just from two bones. We can't even say for certain if this is indicative of all Denisovans. I mean, the Denisova cave is over 4,000 miles away. This was also a really big shock to scientists and to archaeologists as well, because they didn't expect to find the Denisovans so far away. They were considerably more well-traveled than previously expected. Denisovans were so mobile that they left evidence all over the Pacific region. Just like the evidence that first clued us into their existence, the clues that we find here are usually DNA or proteins like we see in the Penghu Strait. When the water caused the DNA to deteriorate, protein's the next best choice. And we see Denisovans were all over the Pacific region, with the Melanesians, Australian Aborigines, Polynesians, with some other places in the Pacific Islands having the most Denisovan DNA in them. On the flip side, East Asia, on the mainland, has a very small amount of Denisovan DNA, the same amount that you find in the Native Americans, about 0.02%. And this has led many archaeologists to speculate that Denisovans may actually have had the ability to make boats of some sort. In fact, many scientists believe they crossed the Wallace Line, a line between Indonesia and Australia that is separated by deep water, and is the boundary for different animals from the respective continents. Now, this is no mean feat, as most animals do not cross this line, so this does show some technology and or intelligence. And this really opens the doors to a lot of different ideas when we talk about giants. And I think that as we do more research, we're going to find more and more that some of these old myths have a lot more truth to them than we give them credit for. Now, before you throw your phone, because I just said the word giant, just bear with me for a second. I'm not talking 10, 20 foot tall. I'm talking like 6 foot to 8 foot maximum within the range of humans that we know of. Okay, first of all, it's the first thing to keep in mind. Second of all, a whole bunch of people, anthropologists and archaeologists from the 1800s, late 1800s and early 1900s, claimed to have found these. They weren't just farmers. And next thing to keep in mind is the guy that debunked them all, a man by Ailes Hyde Licca, from being a medical scientist to being an anthropologist strictly to push the narrative that the measurements of bones were indicative of biological determinism. You could tell how smart, criminal, good, or bad a person was based on how long the different bones in their body were. This is the man who comes in and says, oh, no, these Native Americans did not have bones that were bigger than the white guys. Did I mention he was a white supremacist?
It was the 19th century pseudoscience of anthropometry. Herdlicka was one of many researchers attempting to use anthropometry to find physical differences between people of different races as a way of explaining assumed differences in intelligence, criminality, physical fitness, and more. And he was so passionate about this research that in 1895, Herdlicka officially left medicine to become a physical anthropologist.
But even after all that guy's hard work, 20 years later, the director of the Department of Anthropology at the Carnegie Museum found another giant bone in a Native American mound in the Americas. Native American. Yet that's where it was from, the Americas. Measurements taken of the skeleton while still in the grave indicate an individual approximately 7 foot 2 inches tall. Well, they dismissed this by claiming that was just an in-ground 7'2" measurement, but clearly, Dr. DeGruy said the measurements indicate an individual that was 7'2". Pretty big difference between me saying this measurement indicates something and this measurement is something, but that's how they debunk it. You know, they just throw him under the bus. The fact is, throughout history, they have dug up a lot of Native American mounds and have consistently found bones that were larger than expected. Now, sure, there's going to be a lot of mistakes made throughout history, but there's no way you can dismiss all of these through by mistake. The fact is, it looked like, just like your mom, those Native American mounds had a lot of big bones in them. And if that's not interesting enough to you, perhaps the next bit will be. Evidence so strong that they seem hell-bent on covering it up. The highest concentration of documented elongated skulls in the record was found in the Pacific Northwest. Lieutenant Charles Wilkes, in around 1815, saw 3,000 above-ground burials at Mount Coffin in what is now Longview, Washington. And Lewis and Clark saw similar things, as did other explorers in the region. And while none of these guys specifically say that the skulls of the natives on Mount Coffin were elongated, simple math will show us that that's the case. In order to be buried on one of these sacred sites, a Memalusalahi, as the Chinook people called it, you had to have status. You couldn't be a slave. You couldn't be cursed. In order to prove this, the Chinook sign of freedom, as the Smithsonian Institute called it, you had an elongated skull. Your parents artificially modified your cranium when you were a child if you were freeborn. If this didn't happen to you, you were considered cursed. You were considered lower. In order to be buried on a sacred burial site, you had to not be a lower-born person. Are you following the math here? That entire place would have been covered with people with artificially modified skulls. Now, what's interesting about this is you look at the map of artificially modified skulls and the distribution that you see in the Pacific region, and then you look at where the Denisovan DNA shows up, and it's remarkably overlapping. And the thing is, the elongated skulls look a lot like the Denisovans. For example, this is the skull of the once famous Chinook chief Comcomly. Extremely modified, and artificially so, according to him and his people. And while there's a clear difference between his skull and the Denisovan skull, they also both share that bulbous shape at the back. This practice may well be extremely ancient. We see skulls from 12,000 years ago in China with an even more accurate emulation of the Denisovan shape. It seems likely that the Denisovans reached the Americas in prehistory, perhaps following the Kelp Highway, perhaps the old school Bering Land Bridge, or perhaps another route across the chain of islands that would be present back when sea levels were 300 feet lower, one that ran through Easter Island. Now, that possibility seems to align best with the genetic record, but it's tough to say for sure. Now a quick word for our sponsors. Are you watching this video right now? Well, if so, you should watch me October 16th through 18th at the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference in Austin, Texas. You'll find me on stage talking about elongated skulls and lost species of hominid and giants and other giants. Real giants will be on stage. People like Randall Carlson and David Childress and Hugh Newman and J.J. Ainsworth and Billy Carson and the Mystery Boys. That's right. Kurt Metzger and Duncan Trussell are going to be there. They call them the Mystery Boys because it's a mystery as to how they let me on their channel to begin with. But at any rate, come hang out with us this October 16th through 18th at the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference.
How did we get here? I want to hear about fucking coneheads.
Because I just explained it to you, Duncan. Pay attention. October 16th through 18th, Austin, Texas. Link is in the description. Thank you so much. Now returning to your regularly scheduled video. Now, the possibility that references to giants in a lot of ancient mythology are speaking of Denisovans isn't very crazy, like Jimbo said. I mean, we did interact with them, we did interbreed with them, and one of the earliest specimens we found is a hybrid between a Neanderthal and a Denisovan. Now, we either got really lucky finding that thing, or it happened all the time. And there's no reason to assume this wouldn't show up in our oral traditions and written mythologies. In fact, the references to the six-fingered giants, No, I don't mean the bear at your local nightclub. I'm talking about the guys that are talked about in the Bible, like in 1 Samuel. Yet again, there was a war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature, who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he was also born to the giant. 1 Samuel 21:20. These are usually dismissed, right? I mean, it is from the Bible, right? So clearly there's nothing of value at all in there, right? Now, there's a great article my friend James Vieira co-authored with Greg Maestro that's hosted on the Graham Hancock website that deep dives into the 6 digits on giants. But I really want to focus on just one aspect that they didn't. DNA, in particular the GLI3 gene, which controls morphology in the womb. Neanderthal and Denisovans, they have a slightly different version of this. And when they test this in laboratory mice, well, the mice tend to have a misshapen skull, and then they lose a vertebra, and get an extra rib, and extra fingers and toes. But then on the flip side, none of the hands or feet that we see in the record for Neanderthal or Denisovans have 6 digits. But there's only a handful of hands we can actually put our hands on here, and that's a real big problem. You see, we found a handful of Neanderthal hands and no Denisovan hands as far as full hands go. So they have to make implications and inferences based on the bones that they have. And while our current knowledge only showing 5 fingers or 5 toes so far might seem pretty damning, it is important to note we have a genetic marker that indicates we should see some polydactyly, which is the word for extra fingers and extra toes. And we also have references to exactly this in written record, oral traditions, very ancient stories. And in addition to this, there's no reason to assume that any genetic variation is going to show up across the entire population. This is a big deal in my opinion. We're not going to see 6-fingered and 6-toed giants everywhere we find a Denisovan or a Neanderthal. But we're going to probably see more of them than we would of Homo sapien. And that shows up in our memory. That's my belief. I know it's crazy. I'm giving credence to the Bible. Now, there's clear restrictions on how big a human could be. The skeletal density is a big limiting factor, and of course, another species could have denser bones, but of course, we would also see that in the record. But we can kind of put all that to bed with this. I mean, this pretty clearly indicates this dovetailing of evidence, kind of clearly indicates that there is some memory of our interaction with Denisovans or a very Denisovan-y species in our record. Like we remember it. And this is kind of funny because, once again, science, archaeology, is just now catching up with where the pseudo guys have been for the last freaking 50, 100 years. What, 200 years? To where mythology is. You're just now catching up, boys. Maybe pull your heads out of your asses. But you know, this is par for the course. We saw this with Easter Island when Thor Heyerdahl was like, I think there was contact between South America and Easter Island. And for 70 years, everybody mocked him until DNA proved he was right all along. And then they just scratch their head and say, pretend that they don't know anything about it. Same thing with Clovis First. As a matter of fact, when you have a situation like this, where the scientists cock-block new information from coming to the forefront, the scientists afterwards try to diminish it and pretend like it was nothing, like that was no big deal.
A very large number. The Clovis First lobby, the Clovis Police, as they used to be called by other archaeologists.
So it wasn't
well,
one
Well, think
person.
About how many people actually study the Clovis period. That is a tiny period in one area of the world. The majority of archaeologists do not study that. Even Americanist
that's
archaeologists.
That's completely irrelevant.
Most Americanist
it's
archaeologists study
to the
much
issue
later
of the,
periods.
It's fundamental to the issue of the peopling of the Americas.
But it's direct. It's and also the, direct evidence of a group of archaeologists going after this one guy for saying something that turned out to be correct.
It's evidence of an academic argument. Which happens, yes.
But not that simple, right? Because he was correct, and they dismissed him. They wouldn't listen to his evidence, and he turned out to be correct.
But careers were ruined. Progress was stifled, and it was done out of ego, something the scientific method is supposed to root out. But the problem is archaeology doesn't function as a proper science. It just kind of gets to do whatever the hell it wants because it doesn't have any guardrails in the form of actual hard data. There's a lot of speculation involved. So we get these ego-driven wars where a perfectly reasonable hypothesis about another species of hominid gets treated like he's saying the Earth is flat and aliens made it out of Fortnite building materials. The field really needs to clean itself up. I can predict how things are going to go with this Denisov and stuff for the next few years. There's going to be a bunch of guys that stand opposed to the whole idea of these being the giants in mythology until the wave eventually pushes them all aside, and then they're going to claim that was always their position to begin with.
I meant to do that.
As long as these reasonable hypotheses keep getting treated as outlandish, it's up to us alternate researchers to figure the things out that these guys considered to be taboo for whatever reason.